Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, I want to welcome Jack Roth from J3 Films. He is one of the three creators of the documentary Extraordinary, The Stan Romanek Story, and their new documentary, Extraordinary, The Seating. His partners are John Sumple and Jamie Cernoff. Tonight, he is here to talk about their new documentary, Extraordinary, The Seating, which is the second in a trilogy of films intended to take the viewers deeper into the abduction and hybridization phenomenon. It premieres on digital platforms worldwide on September 3rd at 3 a.m. Eastern. Jack, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, thanks. How about you, Chris?
I'm very good. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking the time. I'm very excited to see the film. I'd like to start out with a little bit more about your background and what got you started doing this and what brought you guys together.
Sure. Well, I'm actually, my background, I'm a journalist by trade, that for about 20 years, and also obviously a filmmaker. And John and I, the director and one of the producers of J3 Films, he and I met, almost 25 years ago. And we had started talking about doing some documentaries in the paranormal realm at that time. And we did some work. We did some stuff in New Orleans and Savannah, shot some stuff there. And we're trying to figure out what we really wanted to do. And long story short of that is, I was out in Colorado about 7-8 years ago. And I was looking for the story that we were going to do. I was looking for that really compelling story. And I went to a conference, a UFO conference out there. And I was, it was a Stephen Greer thing. And I was, you know, listening to him. But while I was there, I met a couple of the guys who were working on, they were investigating the Stan Romanek case. And at the time, it was like, they were like, you have to see the evidence. You have to hear about this. And they did. They showed me the evidence. I'll never forget. We went to a diner in Denver that night and the night afterwards. And the night afterwards, they brought their computer. And they had been working on the case for a couple of years with several other people, a couple of PhDs, a quantum physicist. There were a lot of scientists involved in Stan's case. So I was just like, wow, there's so much evidence here. There's so much interesting information that this is the story we need to tell. So that's how Extraordinary, the Stan Romanek Story, which was our first documentary, came to be. And then after that, when that was got distribution, the 1091 Media, which used to be The Orchard, asked us, they said, well, make more, because the Romanek Story did so well. It did better than they thought it was going to do. It did well on Netflix and all the video streaming platforms. So we decided that we were going to continue the story. We were going to continue telling the story we had started, because with Stan's story, it was about one man's story and all these experiences he had, and then went into abduction, and then kind of ended. We kind of teased the fact that at the end of that, he was dealing with these children that were calling him, these 7-8-year-old kids who were calling him on the phone and saying, hey, daddy, this is your daughter, blah, blah, blah. And the inference there was that these were his hybrid children, which were the result of the abductions that he had experienced. So that's when we decided in the second film, Extraordinary, The Seating, we were going to talk more about that. We were going to go into the hybridization and the hybrid kids.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Yeah, my mic went out for a second. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. If you could just give us a little overview of the film. It's, you know, basically about hybridization, human hybrids with these ETs, right?
Yeah. The way it evolved was we had met a couple of women while we were doing research for Stan's story. And during that time, in that course of a couple of years, we met some woman who had come forward and told us their stories about these unexplained pregnancies that they had had, that they were experiencers, they were abductees, they had had these abduction experiences, and that they had also had these unexplained pregnancies as part of that process. And they would have, during the first trimester of the pregnancy, all of a sudden overnight, the baby was gone. And there was no explanation for it. They would go to the doctor, then the doctor would kind of give an explanation, because doctors don't, they like to have the answer to everything, you know? So when they're like, you know, they're like, okay, that's strange, but your body probably absorbed the baby, which is something that is a real thing. But in a lot of these cases, the women know their bodies. There was no evidence whatsoever of a miscarriage, nothing at all. And then it was all the other bells and whistles that you hear about in abduction cases, where you have, you're being abducted, you're remembering the abduction, you're remembering that during the abduction, they're doing experiments on you, and they're looking at your every body part. They're extracting things from you, including hair, skin samples, and the same with men, obviously, and they, you know, sperm. And so there was this sexual undertone, a DNA component to what they were doing. And then what would happen with these women is, after that, they would be abducted again. And over the course of a couple of years, they would be on craft during an abduction, and they would be introduced to their child, their hybrid child. And they described the child as being kind of human, but not totally human looking. And they would be introduced to that child, and the maternal instinct would kick in at that point, and they would feel, it was a very emotional, the whole process, the whole experience, starting with an abduction, is extremely emotional. So what wind up happening is John and I were on the phone with at least several dozen people, hearing their stories and deciding who we wanted to have in the film. And we had, we chose obviously certain people for it. And what we learned very quickly was, instead of being mostly about the phenomena, which is important, obviously it's the abduction scenario, the hybridization programs that could be involved in the abduction process, but it became more about the journeys of these experiencers and the things that they went through, and the fact that they were really having, they were struggling, and they had post-traumatic stress disorder, and they were, you know, depression, anxiety. And it became their stories. It was important for us to tell their stories in order for people to understand that whether you believe in this or not, it's important to have empathy for people who are going through these things that you might not understand, but it's real to them. And that's really what the emphasis of the movie became.
Very good. Now, where did you find, how did you find these people that you interviewed?
Yeah, that's a great question. We had met some people during our first, while doing our first film and doing research for that. Because, you know, you go to events and you meet one person who introduces you to another. And one of our producers, Lori Wagner, she's amazing at, she knows everyone and she knows a lot of people. And she was able to put us in touch with several individuals. And then it went from there. So that's how we started to meet and then talk to all of these people.
Now, I know you went through like a vetting process. How did that process work, and how could you tell if they were, there's no sure way to tell if they're telling the truth, but how, you know, I'm sure you got a gut feeling about it, but how did that process go?
Yeah, a couple of things. One of the things when you're on a phone with someone, and they're, you know, you're talking to them and they're from Missouri and they're on the phone and, you know, let's take an example, just a, you know, housewife from Missouri with a couple kids. And she's just sitting there and she's just talking to you, like you're having this conversation and she's struggling, you know, she's telling you the story. She wants to tell about what happened to her, but you can hear in her voice that it was a harrowing experience and that she's still struggling with certain aspects of it. And when these people tell their stories and you hear it once and then you hear it again, it never changes. It's just, this is what happened. And it's also another thing, when you get on the phone with someone and if the first thing they ask you is, well, how much am I getting paid? Then you're like, okay, the red flag goes up a little bit. And we're not taking away from the fact that people need to make a living, because in a lot of cases, people's lives have been really turned upside down. So they are like, look, you know, I'll do this, but I need to, you know, whatever. So that does happen. But, you know, like you said, it's a gut, it's an instinctual, intuitive feeling that you get after spending time with someone, whether speaking on the phone with them for several hours or actually meeting them. And when you see their emotional state, you just know, you know, you can tell that this is the real deal. It's the real deal for them. And they're very credible witnesses.
Now, were there a lot of people that you tried to interview that just didn't want to tell their stories and you knew there was something there, you know?
Yeah, we had some of that, and it's a little frustrating, but we totally understood. And we actually had a couple of women who did tell us their stories, but then decided they just couldn't go on camera. And that was, so it was, you know, to talk on the phone and share their stories with us. And we felt privileged for that. But they were just honest in the end for several reasons. It could be, look, I have a family. My husband doesn't believe in this, or in some cases, my wife doesn't believe in this. And if I do something like this, it's just going to cause more problems in my relationship. Some professionals, look, I have a really high profile job. I'm just not ready to come out publicly with this. I will share all the details with you on the phone, in person, but I can't be on camera. Now, what's interesting about that is one of the women in the film was in a situation like that. She was actually from Missouri. She was from a very conservative area in Missouri. She had a Christian upbringing. Everyone around her was, you know, Christian. It was very difficult for her to talk about this. But what she decided to do is she goes, I think it's important for people to hear my story. Is it okay? And then we talked to her about, well, maybe we can, you know, black you out. And then maybe change your voice a little bit. So she's in the film, but her face is blacked out, almost like a, you know, witness protection program, a mob show would be. So we really, that, and her story is amazing, very emotional, but again, you can't actually see her face.
What were some of the, if any, recurring themes that you came across in your interviews?
Yeah, another great question. When it comes to the ET abduction scenario, phenomena, there are a lot of consistencies in the stories that people tell. And what you typically come across is something happens when they're children and they have a memory of when they were 7, 8, 9 years old and there was an owl in their window and they always used to come and stare at them in the window, or they remember E.T. gray aliens somehow. And they remember them being in their room, or they remember floating out of their room and whatever, something like that happens. And then they have these memories. The ones that haven't been through regression therapy yet, they do have some memories of these experiences. But once they're abducted, they usually lose all control from the standpoint of they're paralyzed, or they can't run. There's nothing they can do about it. They're being abducted. These ETs obviously have technology that's controlling their bodies and to some extent controlling their minds. And they're communicating telepathically. So they're being abducted. Okay. So they're taking, for the most part, on board some kind of craft, and then they're being experimented on. Like, you know, we would experiment with, you know, some kind of animal that we tagged and then wanted to draw blood and take a skin sample and take a hair sample and extract sperm or extract ova, extract eggs, and do all these different kinds of experiments with eyes, every part of the body. And then they are told to, you know, there's a calm. Most of the time they see what they describe is what we would consider your typical grays, your smaller gray ETs with the huge eyes, almond-shaped eyes, etc. It's like the cover of Whitley Strieber's book. But there are also other types of ETs that they describe, and they're usually there. It could be a reptilian kind of ET. It could be an insectoid that kind of looks like a grasshopper. And then there's also the tall Nordics, the tall, blonde, rather attractive individuals. And they tend to, in the stories they tell, they're there, but it's the grays that are doing the work and the other ones are supervising them.
I'm glad you said that, because in a lot of the cases, in a lot of people I've talked to, they always say the insects are in charge. Is that something you came across?
We did. Yeah, we came across that. And in one particular gentleman in the film, one of the we focus on three main people. And we have other people in the, obviously, in the story, and their stories are in there, but there's three main individuals. And the gentleman that we focused on, he described that in detail, where they were in charge. They were the ones that seemed like they were in control of what was going on. And again, the grays were more like, I don't want to say workabees, because they're brilliant scientists. They're doing the experiments, but there's that kind of a relationship going on.
How terrifying is that, that insects are in charge of all this? You got to think of, you know, the emotions or lack of that these beings may have, you know?
Right. And one of the things we tell people first and foremost is that these people are being taken against their will. Now, we don't know what the end game is. No one knows. No one knows really why this is happening. We're focusing on a certain aspect of it. But it is an absolutely horrifying experience for everyone that has it, that goes through it. And what winds up happening is, over time, like anything else, you get more, you adapt to it. You put it in a box that fits in your life, that you can function on a daily basis and deal with these strange experiences that you're having. And a lot of times when you see people speak, or you see them on TV or whatever it is, they've been experiencing it for years. So, but usually the first couple of years when they're experiencing this, it is absolutely devastating. And many of them literally have post-traumatic stress disorder, just like a soldier would come back, you know, from Afghanistan or Iraq and have post-traumatic stress. They are suffering from the same exact thing. That's how terrible it is. And that's one of the things we wanted to focus on. We wanted people to realize that, look, you know, most shows you see, they focus on the phenomena itself. You know, they focus on the craft in the sky, who the ETs may or may not be, which is all important. And I have a journalism background. That stuff is extremely important. But it's the emotional aspect. Like, you know, you asking that question, you're like, man, that must be horrifying. And yeah, I think so too. Like, I'm like, this must be horrifying. And when you're sitting in front of someone and they're crying, and you know that you can see they're shaken up, and it's really hard for them to tell certain parts of the story of their experiences, it has a profound emotional impact, obviously, on them, but also when you hear it, when you're there, it impacts you as well.
And you briefly touched on this, but are most of these cases, do they start when they're young children?
Yeah, that tends to be what we hear. And that's, again, not every case is this exactly the same. Not every age is exactly the same. But it seems to be that what the evidence suggests is, and what I mean by evidence is the tens of thousands of people who are telling their stories. That's the evidence. It's these eyewitness accounts. And they tend to tell stories about, you know, when I was a kid, this happened. And, you know, then they tell this story about an ET contact where they met this strange woman in a grocery store and the woman looked really weird. And the woman said something to them very strange, like, oh, you're a starseed or, you know, whatever they might say. And it's like, yeah, remember that weird woman I met? And yeah, so they do, they start in early age. And another thing we learned, a little bit of a pattern, was that a lot of times it's multi-generational. So the mother, the grandmother, the father, the grandfather, that there was some kind of abduction experiences going on with them as well. And also that there was a military connection. So people, oh yes, my father was in the military, or my grandfather was in the military, or grandmother was in the military. So there's this military connection. There's a familial multi-generational connection. And it seems as if people are being chosen or tagged when they're younger, being monitored somehow, sometimes maybe a device being put in, which is another conversation. But, and then another thing is, it almost seems like when a woman is of fertile age, same with when a male reaches puberty, that's when the abductions and the hybridization experiments start in earnest. And they last through the fertile period of a woman's life.
It's very interesting. Now, you mentioned military, you know, they had some kind of military background. There's always this strange military connection. And it makes me wonder if, you know, not only the military is involved and they know about it, but if they're actually conducting some of these abductions, or many of them, and have a lot more involvement than we think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we kind of, we try not to draw any conclusions. And as filmmakers, I want to preface this. Obviously, as filmmakers, we try to be objective. We try to just tell the story. We're sharing the information in an objective way, a logical way, and hopefully a compelling way that's entertaining audiences. But yeah, I think that, you know, you have this, we have two of the people in the film, Sierra Noblina and Niera Isley, were both actually in the military. So they were in the military and they had experiences, and there was a direct correlation with their experiences and a military presence. And a military presence, in the case of Niera Isley, in the abduction. So while she was being abducted, she saw military people in military uniform in the actual room. And one of the three main individuals that we focus on, April Malloy, said the same thing. Now, she wasn't in the military, but she talked about, actually, in her exact words, and this is tough to talk about even, but in her exact words, said she mentioned the word rape, that she was being raped. So there was actual penetration from an ET, and in this case, it was a reptilian. But in the background, she remembers other reptilians and then other people in military uniform. That's a hard, the thought of that is just like, come on, you know, that makes it even more horrifying and scary.
That is terrifying. Now, you also touched on this briefly, like the insertion of foreign objects or implants, some kind of chip or something. Is that something that you came across often in your interviews, is people being implanted with some sort of foreign object?
Yeah, well, one of the things, the common things that happens when people, the next morning, the next day after an abduction scenario, abduction event, they'll have marks on their body, strange marks on their body. And it might be a little triangle, three little dots on their arm, or scoop marks where there was skin. So someone took a sample of their skin, things like that. And not in the case of Stan Romanek, which in our first film, he definitely had implants that he was being monitored. And what's odd about those is those were tested in a laboratory. And it was determined that they were both biological and mechanical in nature. And the person we spoke to in that particular instance said there was a biological component to it, so that the body wouldn't reject it, because our bodies tend to reject foreign objects in the body. But whatever technology they're using, they're making it so that the body's not rejecting it. So yeah, that is another component of the abduction phenomena.
I want to talk a bit about the whole hybrid human theory. I come across it so much. So many researchers I talk to are definitely convinced that there is some sort of hybrid program ongoing that's could have been going on for thousands of years. We don't know, but they believe there's definitely something going on now, and that possibly these hybrids are walking amongst us even right now. I have some researchers that believe that we're being slowly replaced by these hybrids. But you know, just your thoughts, do you think that it's possible that we could be walking amongst some of these hybrids that are being created and experimented with?
I do. I believe that that's a distinct possibility. And I'll start with saying this, that is the why of this equation. You have abductions. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people across the globe are having these experiences. But then you always ask the question, in journalism, you know, it's the why. So you have the what, when, where, who, or possibly who. Why? Why would they be abducting all these people? And when you look at what's happening during the abductions, there's all these sexual experiments. There's you know, sexual penetration. If not, there's almost an in vitro fertilization going on, where women are being stuck with these huge needles, and that's then all of a sudden, within a, you know, they get back and they're home and they're pregnant the next week. So there's all of this suggests those kinds of experiments. And then you have the end result are these people seeing their children, whether on craft, they're being introduced to their children, or in the case of Stan Romanek and some other people, earthbound, where they're calling and they're saying, you know, hi daddy, I'm your daughter. You know, my name's Kioma, and it's really hard to communicate, and I can't talk for long, but da-da-da, whatever they're saying. And it's a profound experience. It's an extremely emotional experience for them. So these children, when we were finished with the first film, I told John and Jamie, my partners, I said, it's about the kids. Whatever's going on, whatever's happening, the answer lies with the kids, the children. And whether it is that we're going to be, and there's different theories on that. Well, what about these kids? Why? Well, you have the one, we're being colonized, we're going to be replaced. And we were fortunate enough to interview Dr. David Jacobs for the third film, where we're going to go even further into this. And David Jacobs obviously he believes it's nothing's good about this. It's not good for humanity, and that we are being colonized, and that they're going to replace us. That's that theory. The other theory is more of a happier, positive ascension theory, where these children are the next step in human evolution, and they're going to allow us to become cosmic neighbors, cosmic travelers, galactic travelers. This is the next step in human evolution. Okay, fine. And then there's also a biblical interpretation where it's all in the Bible. This is all written in the Bible in one way, shape, or form. And so therefore, it's all just coming true. It's all happening. And we have to be very careful of that, because this is this great deception, you know, where the ETs are deceiving us. They're not really who they say they are. So there's all these different theories, but again, it all comes back down to the children, which was why we thought it was so important to focus on the hybridization programs and these hybrid children.
One of the questions that always comes up is, is it's because of certain bloodlines that these people are being abducted? Is there a certain genetic feature? Is there anything that you came across that would indicate something like that? What are your thoughts on it?
We had heard going into it, you always hear about, I think it's Rh negative blood, and there's a certain percentage that's a higher percentage than it should be of people who actually have Rh negative blood is low in the population, right? But the people, that amount of people, the Rh negative amount of individuals within the abduction community is high, higher. But part of the, we, our approach to these films wasn't necessarily to do a ton of, you know, to go into laboratories and try to, you know, get statistical data. I mean, if there was statistical data available, no one's ever really done a really strong statistical study to suggest that a certain blood type is what they're looking for. But there is it. There is a suggestion of there's definitely a DNA component, because if it's multi-generational, they're sticking with these families, and there's something in our DNA. And there this all comes down to medical science from the standpoint if. Whatever technology they're using to create these hybrid children, they are, obviously there's a strong DNA component. So in order for them to do it right, for it to work the way they want it to work, perhaps a certain type of DNA or blood type works better. We can't say for sure, but there is a suggestion of that. And it's something that really needs to be looked into further is what I would say. I would say that, you know, if possible, maybe do blood work on everyone. If you can, a lot of people don't want, they've already been poked and prodded, and they're kind of squeamish about being poked and prodded more.
Right. Yeah. Now, do you find that most of the experiences that people had were malevolent experiences where they were in fear the whole time, or did you come across any where they were not, where they, it was a pleasant experience?
Okay. That's probably the most important question we can ask, because that's where I think morally we run into issues with it, because most, a very high percentage of people that we have interviewed, it's a malevolent experience simply because they're being taken against their will. They're not volunteering for this. And so you have an overwhelming majority saying that it was not an experience I would have wanted to have to me. I would not have chosen or volunteered to do it. Now, some of the actual abduction experiences as they're being abducted, some are more harrowing than others. Some are calmer than others. And what you hear is that ETs somehow telepathically are calming them down. They're saying it's okay, everything's going to be okay. And people, all of a sudden, they'll feel a lot calmer about the experience because they're freaking out. They've been taken from their bedrooms, in many cases taken through their windows or through literally through the wall. And that's another conversation. But, you know, there's this, it's how do you come to terms with that in your head, right? So, but it's a great question, because what winds up happening is some people who have had the experience over time, over and over again, they come to terms with it by saying to themselves, I must have chosen to do this before I was born. Maybe in another lifetime, it was a spiritual thing that I chose to do this. It was an agreement. And it's for the betterment of humanity. I can't say anything one way or the other about that, because people have their own experiences, and that's their paradigm. It's what they believe. And that's okay. I mean, then you do have people that come to terms with it, and they come to terms with their abductors, so to speak, to say, okay, well, they're doing it, but you know what? I actually have one of the people in the film. She believes that her son, who was born as a result of that, they helped her and her husband have a child. Now, the child is a hybrid DNA-wise, but he's, for all intents and purposes, a human child. But they were having trouble conceiving for years. But she was having all these experiences and all these miscarriages. But she believes she was abducted one night. She remembers something being done to her. And then shortly thereafter, she was actually pregnant and was allowed to keep this baby. So, a lot, you know, it's this weird psychological thing that goes on with people, you know. But what I say is, and this is where there's that moral dilemma, is what... if doing this, and that some people think this is extreme, but isn't it a crime against humanity to be abducting hundreds of thousands of people against their will? And I do have a positive outlook. I'm not so much about colonization and we're all doomed. I'm not. I do believe that one day we will evolve as humans and we will become part of this galactic family. I really do believe that will happen. It's the means to an end that I think is the issue. And I don't know if the same morality applies with these ETs. I don't think they think they're doing anything wrong. I really don't necessarily believe they are. They think they're doing anything wrong. We have to consider all of it.
Right. And the most troubling part for me is that the reports that they're the ones in charge are the insects and the reptilians. I mean, you don't typically hear positive things about insectoids and reptilians in all these stories. They're, you know, you always hear, oh, reptilians rule the world. They're the ones keeping us down right now. But, you know, there's no way to tell any of that. But when it comes to these experiences, it just seems like they wouldn't be doing it to benefit us in any way. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you think about it objectively and you accept the fact that people are being abducted by ETs, let's say you're a person who comes to the, you allow that to be a reality, right, in your mind. You believe that. So, yes, people are being abducted. They're being abducted by ETs. Okay, fine. So then you ask, well, you know, what is, you know, what's going on? Why? What's the end game here? And I think that a lot of people, when you think about the idea that there are these reptilians, these, let me say this. What Clifford Stone, who is a whistleblower, ex-military, and he was, you know, talked about the fact that he was involved in this crash retrieval. He was part of this crash retrieval team for crash UFOs. And he also was trained telepathically and had a telepathic ability to be able to communicate with the ETs that in these crashes. And he says, and then we actually interviewed him for our third film, but that's will be our next one after this one. But he said that there are 57 known ET species that have been in some type of communication or contact with our government / military. That is a lot when we're still waiting for our radio telescopes, apparently in Socorro, New Mexico, to first get a signal from deep space that there's even life anywhere else. So it's kind of like this weird paradox, right? But yet our military and government knows there's 57 that have already not only contacted us, but somehow we've been working with them, right, in one capacity or the other. So it's hard to say, you know, yeah, you know, like, is, you know, reptilians, are there different types of reptilians? Are there different factions of these? Are they like human beings? Are there good human beings and bad human beings? Are there good reptilians and bad reptilians? Are some nicer than others? Do some of them have better personalities? We really have to think in those terms, you know, where, well, the one reptilian commander is like, you know, we're doing this for the good of humanity, but we need to treat these people better and we need to make sure they're okay. And then the other reptilian commander does not care. He's like the Nazi reptilian commander who doesn't care about human beings. You know, like, I know this sounds it sounds science fiction-y, but we have to think in terms of there's so many factors that could go into this.
Now, depending on what researcher you talk to, some will tell you, oh, these people are being abducted astrally or, you know, through some interdimensional means. Some will say they're physically being taken and they just have a way of returning you and taking you without anything being changed, without anyone else noticing or seeing. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I would say based on our research and the experiences we've had, we're now thinking more, I know I am at least, that it's like, well, maybe there is an interdimensional element to this, that there is a, that's how they're getting here. That allows them to get from such long distances. They're actually, it's an interdimensional travel instead of interplanetary. And a lot of them are able to perhaps because, and I've heard this, that, you know, we're 3D. We live in a 3D reality. The Earth is fairly dense. It's a 3D density. And you hear from a lot of people, well, these beings, certain beings are fifth dimension, five dimensional, eight dimensional, 12th dimensional, and they are of a much less dense makeup. And therefore, it allows them to do things like go through a wall, go through a solid wall, or, you know, do some of the things that they're doing. But there's also the technology factor. The technology can be so advanced that they can, it goes back to Star Trek, a transporter, that they're rearranging molecules and you're getting from one point to the other without having to worry about anything. No solid object's doesn't matter. So the more and more you research, the more and more that interdimensional thing comes up, and it's like, maybe there's some quantum physical, you know, stuff here that we need to learn more about before we can really understand what they're doing.
One of the things that most people don't think about is how traumatizing it can be for these people. You know, thinking about one being abducted one time, having this weird experience that you can just maybe explain away from a bad dream or drinking too much or whatever. But being taken night after night and having the fear of just going to bed, not knowing what's going to happen, that has to be extremely traumatizing. Did you find that most of the people you talked to had some kind of like PTSD after these experiences?
Yes, without question. Every one of them had some kind of, if not full-blown PTSD, then certainly, anxiety issues or depression issues or, anything on that level of just such a traumatic, and not only traumatic, obviously traumatic, but also that you can't wrap your head around it. Because of our earthly paradigm is so we can't even imagine. Now, some people, perhaps like us, we've been thinking about ETs and aliens since we were kids, and we always felt that there was that presence and that they were there, and that some people are more ahead of the game in that. But there are people who are indoctrinated, many people on this planet who are indoctrinated from a very young age, whether it's religiously, socially, whatever, to believe a certain thing. And this is the way things are, and there's nothing else. So all of a sudden, something happens where it just completely destroys your understanding of the way things are supposed to be. Lives are destroyed. People need to realize, and I think when people watch this film, they will really have a much better understanding of what these people are going through. And that was our main goal. Our main goal was to really just ask that question that you just asked, to say, what are these people going through? It's not just that, I got abducted and I think I might have hybrid kids. Isn't that cool? That might sound cool, you know, but the going through it is harrowing. Divorces, family, ruining relationships with other family members, being shunned professionally, being shunned socially, becoming extremely isolated. Almost every person we talk to, there's a sense of isolation because no one's going to believe me. Very few people are going to believe me when I tell them this. I can't tell them this. And it's usually until they meet that other person who's gone through it that they feel like they found their family. They found others. And that's why it's so important. We in this film, we interviewed Yvonne Smith and Barbara Lamb, who are both regression therapists. They live in California. And they have support groups. And there are support groups all over the country where people can meet other experiencers. And you, the power of that, of being able to sit with other people and say, this happened to me. And then they look at you and say, we understand because it happened to us. That is incredibly healing. And I get emotional just talking about it because it's like anything else. It's like a drug addict being in a room with other and saying, I'm a drug addict too. I know what it feels like. Or I've gotten a divorce. I know what that feels like.
There's probably thousands of people out there that are just dying to tell the story, but they're too afraid. They're afraid of being ridiculed. But I think that people are more understanding than we think. I think that especially nowadays, people are starting to kind of wake up to some of the things that are going on. And, they'd really be more understanding than a lot of people think. They just have to actually come out and tell the story. And, it's people like us, people like you that are making these films and doing these things to help people kind of come out and do that. And that's awesome.
Yeah, that's huge. And you're right. I do believe that we are getting better. We have gotten better about that we're more, you would hope that we're becoming more evolved and that we're becoming more empathetic and sympathetic to others going through whatever they're going through, even though we haven't gone through it. And I think I do believe that. But I do believe also that you're right about the fact that most abductees have not come forward with their stories. So that's why a lot of people think the numbers could be staggering worldwide, because most people haven't said anything.
And sure, in a lot of cases, not only it's not that they haven't said anything, it's people aren't sure. They might have had experiences where they think they may have been abducted, but they don't know. I just had a friend the other day that showed me the scoop marks that she had in her arm that weren't there, and they very much look like typical scoop marks. But again, probably not gonna come out and say anything because they're not sure. But there's probably, like you said, thousands, countless of cases just like this where people just need the motivation to come out and talk about it.
Right, and hopefully by seeing this film, our goal all along was to reach the most people possible with these films. We didn't want to make these films necessarily for people who already believed. And debunkers are always going to be debunkers. So really, if there was a bell curve, we wanted to hit the center of the bell curve. I think most people lie in the middle. Most people have thought about it. They would consider it. At this point, I think more and more people are like, of course there's life on other planets at this point. There's intelligent life probably elsewhere. So we're getting to that point. And I think it's really for that. We want this to reach as many people as possible so it could help as many people as possible. And again, that's been our goal from the beginning.
Have you personally or any of your partners have ever had any contact experiences?
We've had experiences, I can speak for, so it's me, John, Jamie, or the three J's. Lori's another one of our producers. None of us believe, or at least know consciously, that we've been abducted. So we're not coming from that standpoint. We don't believe that we have been, but we have had interesting experiences as a result of the work we're doing. I could tell you one story if you'd like, that's pretty amazing. And it's a result of us being involved in this, if it's okay.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So what happened when we first got involved doing our first documentary with the Stan Romanek story, we were told by people that once you decide to make this film, you need to be ready for what's going to happen, because anyone who ever gets involved in his case, all of a sudden, weird things start happening. You start getting strange phone calls. You might even have someone following you. There's most certainly some kind of, there's someone watching what's happening to him and cares about what's happening to him. So we knew we had to be ready for that. So we started, when we was almost immediately when we started communicating with him, we started getting strange phone calls from, we couldn't determine who they were coming from. It was a human voice, obviously, but it was a kind of like one of those, they called the nickname for, we called it Audrey, Audrey calls. And the reason why is there's actually a program called Audrey that's a voice manipulation system. So you can actually use it, and you sound like a British woman, even though that's not your voice. So we would get these phone calls, you know, very strange. And it was weird. Like my cell phone would call my home phone. John's home phone would call his cell phone. He's in Seattle. I'm in Florida. Lori, who's in California, her cell phone would ring and John would be calling her, but John wasn't calling her. But then when we all picked up the phone, we were all on. So we were like, hello, hello. And we're all on the phone. We're all on the same line. And then what would happen is we'd hear interference. And almost every time we'd get disconnected the first time. And sometimes we'd get disconnected the second time. But by the third time, we'd all get connected again. And we knew it was going to happen after a while. And then this voice would come on. This very polite British woman's voice, which was obviously, you know, not really a British woman. And she would say, hello, can you hear us? Every time, the same thing. Hello, can you hear us? Yes, we can hear you. And she would say, we're sorry that we got disconnected, but it is very difficult to communicate from such long distances. Okay? We want you to know that it is, keep doing what you're doing. It is important that Stan's story gets out. There are people who don't want this story to, how you say, see the light of day, but know that we're working on that and you are safe.
Wow.
and we got maybe, I got 4 or 5, John, same amount, like, but all told, probably we got 7 or 8 of these calls during the course of a year or so. And sometimes Stan was on the phone with us, like literally on the phone talking with us, and all of a sudden this would happen. And we did our due diligence. We called, John had a relative who was in the work for the phone company. And he asked him, he described exactly how these calls happened and said, is it possible for people for that to happen? Can someone pretty easily do that? And he said, and he worked for the phone company for like 25 years, retired as a phone company guy. And he said, it's possible, but it's government. It has to be high level to have that kind of technology. The guy in his basement down the street is not playing a hoax on you. Now, he didn't say it was ETs or anything. He didn't say it was, you know, the NSA. But what he said was, it is high-level technology in order to be able to do that. Very, very strange. So we're left with that. We're left with who was talking to us. And actually, Stan himself had gotten phone calls from these little girls. And it was those were not a British female, you know, mechanical voice. These were little girls saying, hi, daddy, and then getting disconnected and then saying, sorry, daddy, you know, but we're trying to communicate with you from very far distances and it's hard to communicate. And they would say things like that to him. And those were recorded and they're in the film, but some of those calls were recorded, and that will blow your mind. Yeah. I that changed me forever because I was like, what in the world? Like we had to sit there and look at each other and say, did ETs just communicate with us?
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was, that was the beginning of some high strangeness when it came to what we were going through. So, but that's not, you know, we didn't focus on what's happened to us. during all of this. And it's really not about us. It's about the people that we have in the film. But yeah, it's sometimes you go down a rabbit hole and you got to be ready for what you experience, you know.
Definitely. Did any of the people you interviewed have regressions done?
Yes, they did. We had several that did do regressions, and they were far enough along in their journey that they reached out and they had regressions. And that's why we had Barbara Lamb and Yvonne Smith in the movie, because they talked about the regression process and what they do. And because, you know, there's always controversy and everything, you know, people say, well, regression is really not a reliable kind of thing to do, because there's a lot of suggestion associated with it from the person who's doing the actual regression. But we found that in the case of Yvonne and Barbara, and there's others all across the country, that for the most part, they're extremely professional. And their number one priority is their patients, is the people they're regressing. They want to make sure that they're safe, that they're okay, and that they feel safe when they're doing the regressions. And the regressions help, because the regressions, they call it regression therapy for a reason. People have regression therapy for other reasons. They have regression therapy perhaps to stop smoking, or to, you know, for childhood trauma, for other kinds of childhood traumas, and sometimes past life trauma. You know, with Brian Weiss, that's what he did. So what normally happens is more memories come to the surface. So they come to the surface, and they allow people to be able to deal with what happened to them. The more they know, the more they can understand, the less frightening it is. It still doesn't mean, if you do a regression session and you find out that, oh my God, they did this to me, that's not necessarily a good thing that comes up. But the fact that it actually now is out and you can talk about it is helpful to the human psyche. So that's why that I believe regression therapy is an important part of this as far as experiencers are concerned.
What are your thoughts on where disclosure is going now? We've had some interesting things happen with the leaks, the military leaks, different whistleblowers coming out. My personal thoughts, I think it's all controlled. It's definitely for a reason. I don't know if it's a good reason or a bad reason. I don't really trust some of the sources that it's coming from, but it's something. They are definitely doing it for a reason. What are your thoughts on what's going on? I mean, it's like alien madness out there now.
It is, and I totally agree with you. Now, this is just my personal opinion. No one knows what's going to happen. No one knows what's happening for sure. But I do believe that it's a controlled kind of soft disclosure. I think it's a slow drip. And what I mean by that is I think that they're putting stuff out there just to see how everyone's going to react. And to say, oh yeah, well, the military, the Pentagon did know, and they were interested in this, and there are cases that are blah, blah, blah. So it kind of, it warms people up a little more to the idea that perhaps one day we will get that, the biggie will come where it's like, yes, there are ET life exists, and there, we know who they are. But here's the problem that I have, and I tell people this, and I hate this because I feel like I, over the years of doing all the research that we've done and meeting the people and interviewing the people that we've interviewed, that I've become a little more jaded in the way I think about disclosure, because if I just don't think that disclosure is going to come from the government or the military. I don't think that they can at this point, because they've covered it up for so long. Now, if they just covered it up and said national security, they could spin that in a way that would work. They could say, look, the reason why we've never said anything, this all started during the Cold War, when we realized in the 40s that there was something else. We were being visited. We could not share that information because it would have caused panic, and the Russians, we didn't know what the Russians knew, what they didn't know. They could I would back that up. I'd say national security, there is a place for that. Absolutely. But how do they explain the abductions? How do they explain the, because that becomes, someone needs to pay for those, for that. Someone needs to, even if the military wasn't involved directly with the abductions, but if it was, if it comes out that the military perhaps made an agreement in the 50s or the 40s with an ET race to say, which is out there, the whole Eisenhower thing, where it was like, okay, you give us technology and we'll let you abduct a certain amount of people and a certain amount of cows, or whatever kind of agreement they made, right? How do you justify that? You can't justify that, because there's going to be a lot of people that scream crimes against humanity, because they should, because people are being abducted against their will. So how does the government get around that? How? So I always tell people, we're the disclosure. It's us. We're the ones who are going to, there at some point, we're going to reach a critical mass and a tipping point where we get over it. We get over that tipping point, and more people believe. It's like, come on, man, enough's enough. Where 2 million people are going to show up at Area 51 and storm the gates, or whatever's going to happen. You know what I mean? Where it's just the government has no choice, and they might have scapegoats. They might say, well, those guys in the 50s and 60s who are dead now are the ones that made that arrangement. We've been trying to get out of it ever since, because we don't believe in abduction, but we figured it out now. But those guys, yeah, they were kind of, it's like saying we're gonna tell you who killed Kennedy in 2040, because everyone who might have been responsible for killing Kennedy is dead now. So there's nothing you can do to them. The government has its ways. So that might be what they do. They might say, well, yeah, in the 40s and 50s, these guys, they did that and it was terrible, and we've been trying to correct that, and we're the good guys. They'll spin it, but I would rather them spin it and tell white lies, but at least tell us.
Definitely. I want to thank you so much again for coming on tonight. Before you go, is there any overall takeaways or just important messages that you want to leave us with, that you came out from all of this with?
Right. And thanks for asking that, because I think that's important. And what I would say is this. The important thing to remember when you watch this film, and again, it's Extraordinary, The Seeding, coming out September 3rd, all digital platforms, over 200 digital platforms all across the planet, all across the globe. The thing to remember is that whether you believe or not that these things are happening, people are having these experiences, and they are going through a lot. They're struggling. They're suffering from post-traumatic stress. These are not pleasant experiences in many cases. And what I would say to people is, when you watch the movie, listen to these people, listen to their stories, and try to open your mind and start having conversations with people around you about these things, and to try to be more empathetic to your fellow human beings who are going through something that you may not understand. You might not at all, but the fact is they're going through it. And as a human being, have more empathy, open your arms to them a little bit, you know, and be supportive. So they're not so isolated. And that's the message I would say. You know, there's a lot of information in the film, and there's a lot about the actual phenomena, but it's really, when people watch this, I think they're going to come away feeling for these people, having that strong emotional pull towards these individuals who are having the experiences.
Very good. I want to thank you so much again for coming on, and we're definitely going to have you back on when the next one comes out.
That sounds great, man. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, you have an excellent night.